For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Tonight we're going to do Bar and Bukukraisai, which is normally a double parsha anyways. Okay. Bahar talks about mainly the Shemitah. It talks about 6 years, right? You plant, you harvest your field, 7th year you let it rest, right? Just like the 6 days of the work week. And then you have the Sabbath, the Shabbos, same thing on a yearly cycle. You have 6 years, you work the land, and then 7th year the land rests, so to speak, as a Sabbath. 7 times 7. Then you have a jubilee year. The 50th year becomes a jubilee year. Everything returns back to its owner. Land, loans, so forth and so on. A lot of technical, complicated laws. Okay? And that's basically what Bahar talks about. We'll go back and try to hit the highlights. B'chukaisai is a series of blessings and curses. And it's an age-old formula. Basically, if you do the mitzvahs, God will bless you with material bounty. Right? And if you don't, then you will have it bad in the physical world. Now, we always mention that Schar Mitzvah B'Hai Amaleka, there's no such thing as reward for a mitzvah in this world. So, the classic question in our parsha is, how is it that Hashem says, if you keep my mitzvahs, I'll give you the following materialistic blessings? The idea is, God leads a person, leads a man the way he wants to go. If you show yourself wanting to do mitzvahs, therefore, the reward is in the next world. However, you'll get some of like the dividends in this world. And what is that? God will bless you in the physical dimension in materialism, so you will be able to spend less time in it and more time doing and studying Torah, and doing spirituality, doing mitzvahs. You understand what I'm saying? So the rule applies. No such thing as a reward for a mitzvah in this world. However, the materialistic blessings that are described, if you keep God's commandments, is only for the purpose of giving you comfort, right, and not be bothered in the physical world so you can do more mitzvahs. Right, you understand? Because if God leaves a man the way he wants to be led, you show yourself wanting to do mitzvahs, I'll give you plenty. So you won't have to worry about sustenance, parnasa, making a livelihood, and you can even do more mitzvahs. So that's not even the reward. That's just the fruits, the dividends. The real reward for the mitzvahs is still going to be for you in the next world. Okay. So that's some of that. Now let's back up. Let's go back to Bahar, and let me give you a few insights, if you will. Okay. First of all, if you look at chapter 25, verse 13, I'm going to teach you an important lesson, I hope. Chapter 25, 13. It says, "Bishnas hayevel hazais, in this jubilee year, tashuvu, you will return each man to his inheritance." Okay? So, you know, the Hebrew letters represent numbers. Like our Hebrew date, right? Our Hebrew date is Tav Shun Nun Zion, 5757. That's how we write our Hebrew date. So if you look at this verse, it says that word Tashuvu, which means you'll return, can also mean the year Tav Shin Vav Beis, which equals 5708, which is 1948. So the verse can read, in the jubilee year, you will return. What year is that? The year that you on the word return is also the word 5708, which is 1948, each man to his inheritance. That's when we got the state of Israel back. Okay? Isn't that beautiful? Now, I don't know. Now, here's the lesson. The lesson is, I don't know if that's true. Okay? It's a beautiful, it's cute, it's wonderful, it fits. It ain't documented anywhere. It may be true. I don't know. But unless I see someone actually have written this and see it in print, I heard it quoted in the name of the Zohar, I've never seen it in there. So this is, why am I giving you this? Because this is an example. If you hear things out there, people tell you fantastic things, you got to see it documented. I could give you a lot of things like this, and I don't. I'm giving it to this one time to show you it's very dangerous. You can pull out the cutest things, you can work the Torah any way you want and come out with things. But if it's not documented and there's a source for it, you gotta take it with a big grain of salt. So, I don't know if this is true or not true, it's cute, but you understand the lesson? Okay. Now, we have different types of mitzvahs, right? If you look at verse 18, it describes, V'asisim es chukosai, you shall do my chukim. Those are the statutes, inexplicable laws, ones that we don't even try to understand, right? Remember, chukim, don't wear wool linen, and so forth. And then it says, V'es mishpotai tishmeru, and my judgments you shall keep. Now, those are usually mitzvahs that man thinks he understands, like don't murder, don't steal, right? Those seem like rational mitzvahs, right? So the verse uses two different verbs in these two different sets of mitzvahs. By the chukim, the irrational laws, it says, asisim, do them. And yet with the irrational, with the rational laws, the mishpatim, it says, tishmaru, keep them, safeguard them. Why the different languages for the different sets of mitzvahs? The idea is the following. A chok, you're not going to try to understand. Right? There's only one thing to do with it. Just do it, because God commanded you to do it. But then, so you would think that's the hardest level, right? I'm going to tell you a harder level. The rational mitzvahs, be careful. Don't do those. That's why they say asitam. Vasisam, do them. Don't do them because they make sense to you. But ushmartem, watch them, guard them, safeguard them, that you only do them because God said do them. Okay? The reasoning is you'll get in trouble, right? Because if you agree logically not to murder and such, right? Well, it could come a time, right, that, okay, you understand not to murder, but euthanasia, well, that's something else. You don't consider that murder. Abortions? Oh, you don't consider that murder. And the Torah does. So, therefore, you have to treat those like chukim also, statues also. So, I'm going to read to you, in reference to Mishpatim, which is even a harder test for us. Even though they seem like it's less of a test, because it's logical, we have to not get caught in that trap and do it because it makes sense to our logical mind. Okay? Listen to this. There are those who seek to modernize Torah laws, via deletion. Attempts have been made to emphasize the great truths of Judaism, while at the same time disregard the halacha, which encompasses every facet of Jewish life. Attempts to fuse Torah's logical concepts and disciplines with those of other ethical systems results in a sterile observance. Torah laws, with all their details, were given at Mount Sinai in their entirety for eternity. Man's logic has no bearing on the proper fulfillment of a mitzvah. Therefore, those mishpatim, ushmart them, guard them, watch them, just don't do them. Make sure you don't do them because they make sense. Because eventually something's going to happen in society, right? Where you're going to have to delineate, murder, yeah. But euthanasia, abortions, oh, that's not murder. That's if you think of their rational laws, okay? As he continues, Hashem's mitzvahs, we do them because He commanded us. Our approach to fulfilling mitzvahs are because they are Hashem mandates. And that's what delineates us and maintains our survival. We do mitzvahs not because they're logical and make sense and they're good for civilization and culture to maintain itself. We do mitzvahs because Hashem said do them. Okay. Using a different example. Lo tigzel, don't steal. Okay? So, according to logic, that makes sense, don't steal. But what a person might realize if he thinks it's just a logical law, then he will not include in stealing waking someone up from their sleep. We consider that stealing, right? Or tantamount to murder, Don't embarrass your fellow man in public. We consider like tantamount to murder. Okay? So, you know, all these things, not to gnevis das, to steal someone's mind, to give them a false impression. We consider that stealing. Okay? Okay, let's move on. Chapter 25, verse 17, velo tenu ish es amiso, a person should not, like, cause affliction to his fellow Jew. And this is onas devarim. This means you shouldn't hurt people with words. Whether it's saying, listen, 3 years ago you were sitting there eating bacon cheeseburgers and now you're telling me what to do? You know, that, or just, you know, calling people by derogatory nicknames or anything else that would upset them, okay? So this is, especially we have to be careful with orphans, widows, and converts, or strangers, any strangers. Torah specifies those people as being more susceptible and sensitive. Alright. Couple more things. It says in chapter 25, verse 38, I took you out of the land of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan, Rashi. I took you out of the land of Egypt, I took you out of Egypt so you do my mitzvahs, even if they're hard on you. So I mention this because, certain times we want to sleep late, we don't want to get up in the morning, you know, take a chance of not saying Shema at the proper time. Certain times we don't feel like going to shul. Summer coming up, it's going to be hot days. Remember, really, according to the letter of the law, we should all still be in Egypt. The condition was, God took us out. That's the period we're in right now. God took us out of Egypt on the way to accept the Torah, to serve Him at Mount Sinai. So, every time we get these thoughts, we have to realize we're a rebel. We're rebelling against God. This is the whole condition why He took us out to serve Him. Things got a little tough. You know, yeah, okay, so that shows your mettle. It shows whether you're really a true servant of God. That's a test, right? Again, it's very easy to serve God when everything's going well. Okay, so that person has to always keep in mind. We get spoiled and we forget. But the truth is, all the miracles that God brought upon us, there's a certain achrayus, a certain responsibility we have, a certain obligation we have to God. Okay? Okay, moving on. Now, it says in chapter 25, verse 19, in this, there's a double miracle involved with Shemitah. This is the main thing that the Parshas Bahar talks about. And it says, you know what? You're going to plant 6 years. And then v'achaltam l'seva, then you'll eat and you'll be satisfied on the 6 years. It'll give you bounty for 3 years. Why? Because after the 6 years, you have the seventh year, you can't get any benefit from the land. Right? So you need food for the 6 year, you need food for the 7th year, and you need food for the 8th year, because you're not going to be able to plant on the 7th year to get food for the 8th year. So you'll get food for 3 years. Now this is a double miracle. One, that the 6 year is going to produce 3 years bounty crop. But two, if you ask any farmer, they'll tell you never try to sow your land for 6 years in a row. You ever heard of rotating your crops? Right? Usually, I think it's 2 years, and then they let it rest fallow 1 year. Right? But never do you work the same land 6 straight years. So that is a miracle in itself. God is probably, everybody overlooks this. But a God is promised, you'll be able to work the land for 6 straight years. By the way, next week, in the Parsha after this, it says that, you know, it looks like part of the curses, it says the land will not yield anything when you're off of it, but that's one of the blessings. That when we're not in the land, it's a miraculous land for a miraculous people. When we're on it, we can sit there and plant the same land for 6 straight years and it will produce harvests, which normally weakens the land. But when we're not there, and we only have to look in the past 50, 60 years, 1948, other people come to land and they will not be able to get anything out of it. That's a fact. And that's a blessing because everybody will realize and see that this is our land. This is meant to be ours. This is our homeland. And it will only produce for its children. Okay? But let's go back here. The verse says in chapter 25, verse 19, if you follow along with me, 25:19, it says the following. The lamb will give forth its fruit, and you'll eat and you'll be satisfied. Okay? Rashi says on this, what does that mean? You'll have a blessing within your stomach. In other words, you'll eat a little and you'll be satiated. Not that it'll produce a 3-year bumper crop. In other words, the same amount. Kli Yakar also says this. Same amount, but what will happen is there'll be a special blessing on the food that only a little bit will satiate you. Whereas before you had to eat 3 times as much. Okay, for example. But then, look, follow along with me. We have a little bit of a problem here. Okay, so that's what it says in verse 19. Ve'achaltam l'seiva. You'll eat and be satisfied. Then the very next verse, 20, says, V'ki saimru, and if you'll say, ma nochal b'shana shvis, what will we eat in the 7th year? Right? Hen lo nizra, we didn't plant. V'lo na'asafas tuvaseinu, and we didn't harvest our crops. Verse 21, so Hashem answers, V'sivisi z'brichasi lachem b'shana shishis, then I'll command my blessing on the 6th year, and the asas es atzvua l'shleishanim, and I'll give you harvest for 3 years. So which one is it? Okay, again, verse 19 says, I'm going to give you forth, and you'll eat, and you'll be satisfied. And Rashi says, you'll eat a little, and it'll be satisfied in your stomach. You'll have a blessing on the food. Right? And then it says, but if you'll ask, you know, what are we going to eat in the 7th year? After all, we're not sowing or harvesting. Then I'll command my blessing in the 6th year and give you 3-year bumper crop. So, the way to resolve this is the following. It's according to us. How we're holding in our faith, in our bitachon, in our trust in God. Okay? This is the way it works. If a person trusts in God, then he'll give you the ultimate bracha, which is, you'll eat and you'll be satisfied. You'll eat and you'll be satisfied. And it'll be blessed in your stomach. You'll eat even just a little bit. Right? But if you doubt God's words and you don't have trust in Him, and you say, what will we eat? Then God says, oh, okay, you don't believe the promise in the Torah that you'll be satisfied, you'll eat and be satisfied. I'll give you physically what you can see, 3 years bumper crop, no problem. Then you'll have security. You'll see the food there, you won't have to worry. But the truth is, you're just causing yourself more work. You're going to have to harvest more. You're going to have to eat more. You're going to have to prepare more food. If you're on a higher level, you'll eat just a little. You won't have to eat much. You'll be satisfied. You could spend the rest of your time dealing in spiritualities and doing mitzvahs. You won't have to waste all this time in physical appetites pursuing it. Okay? So it's up to you where you're holding. Right? I can command my blessing on the food, you can just eat a little bit. Or if you want, you have to see it. You don't trust in me, I'll give you 3-year bumper crop. But you're going to waste a lot of time, and you're not going to be able to use that same time in spirituality. Okay? So, I want you to know, this has a lot of connection to the next parsha, which talks about the blessings and the curses. There also, it says, in the admonishment, it says, if you the age-old formula, if you listen to my mitzvahs, rain will fall at its time, all these materialistic blessings, right? Everything will be great. And therefore, you'll be blessed spiritually and physically and materialistically. And because of materialistically, you'll be able to deal more in spirituality. We said that already, okay? But then, it says, if you don't keep my mitzvahs, it starts describing a series of curses. And one of them is, and you'll eat and you won't be satisfied. You'll eat, you won't be satisfied. If you think about it, this is what we're living through today in wealthy America. If you think about it, right, you don't keep the mitzvahs, you're going to have all of a sudden a series of curses that exactly describes today's society, right? That you'll have no peace of mind. You gotta look at the verses inside, guys. You'll have no peace of mind. You'll have no tranquility. You'll have no patience. It says you'll have no patience for the mitzvahs. When you're in shul, you'll be wondering, oh, when can I get out of here, get back to my real life? Right? When you're in shir, how many more minutes left? Right? How long is the davening? How long is Yom Tov? When is Havdalah? Right? And therefore, measure for measure, because you'll have no patience with God's mitzvahs, right? It's because you want to get back to your materialistic pleasures, then measure for measure, mida keneged mida, you're going to have no patience, no tranquility, and no true enjoyment, even in your physical pleasures that you're in such a hurry to get to, right? As a result of this curse, one finds an amazing thing. Today, in our with all the technological advancements that we have, that everything is going faster and everything is more efficient, from cars to jets to computers, microwaves to instant everything. And with all this, man has absolutely no time. With all the time-saving devices, man has less time than ever. We're always running around. Right? From here to here, from this vacation, we're already planning our next vacation. We're not even enjoying the vacation that we're at. Right? And there's no time to stop and think, who am I? Where am I? What am I doing here? What's my purpose here? Right? With all the 20th century comforts, how do you explain the phenomena that you have more people having more emotional and mental problems, more worries, more anxieties, more people turning to shrinks, to drugs, to suicides, to ulcers, right? The bottom line is that despite all the discoveries and all the technological advancements, right, we have less time than ever before, we have less patience, we have less sensitivity, and less peace of mind and happiness in every generation than any generation's ever had. We're always late. It's amazing. We always seem to be late. We have more time-saving devices, and we always seem to be running late. We're always running around. We're always racing to a meeting, to an event. We're always running late. We simply don't have no time. And this is what we call progress. This is progress. This is technological advancement. And therefore, that's the verse. The verse in our parsha, it says, chapter 26, verse 17, and you're going to flee. You're going to run. But no one's chasing you. You're running. You're always racing around. You're always running late. But there's nobody chasing you. You're chasing yourself. You cause yourself. You're involved in so many things, and you're such in a hurry that you're always running. But there's nobody chasing you. Therefore, we're left with this strange paradox. Even though this generation is more materialistically wealthy and has more comforts than any other generation in the history, nevertheless, we live in the most impoverished society that ever has been when it comes to actual satisfaction. Impoverished, we're never satisfied. We cannot even fill the simple verse, Ezu Asher Samech Boko, to be happy with your lot. It's amazing. We are more impoverished, not just spiritually, which is for sure, but even materialistically. You hear this? In the most materialistic, wealthy country, we're the poorest there we've ever been. Why? Because we're less satisfied. We eat, and we're not satisfied. And then we have less than the previous generations who had physically less, but were satisfied. So that's it. That's the curses. And it finishes off there in the portion, chapter 26, verse 26. If you look at it, you'll eat, you'll not be satisfied. I'll cast upon you confusion. You'll be like meshuga. You'll go crazy. And your eyes will long, and your souls will suffer. That's it. None of us have any tranquility, no peace of mind. Of course, these are the curses. This doesn't have to apply to us, the Torah Jew. The Jew seeks spiritual wealth, right? And who uses the materialistic world as a means to an end, right? To give us more free time so we can relax and learn Torah and do mitzvahs, right? Then we sanctify the physical world. We're at peace. We're calm. We make the whole world into a mishkan to Hashem. The choice is ours, and the formula is and always has been the same. It's a very simple formula. If you, the quote, this is a quote from the Parsha. If you do my mitzvahs, right, then basically you'll enjoy this world and the next world. And if you don't, if you feel that it's, you know, it's in your way of enjoying this world, if you don't keep my mitzvahs, not only you won't get the next world, but you won't even enjoy this world. You eat and you eat, but you won't be satisfied. Right, the question's been asked, cheshbon nefesh, a calculation of the soul. Very important, a person has time, if possible, every day, take 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a lot. Stop, talk to God, talk to yourself, think, who am I, where am I? A cheshbon nefesh. Every Friday is a good idea. They recommend doing this. Before Shabbos comes in, take an accounting. Accounting of the soul. Introspection for the week. What have I done this week? What have I accomplished? Where am I holding? At the end of the month. New Year, there's real such thing as New Year's resolutions. Right? This is it. Cheshbon nefesh. I mean, real New Year's resolutions. How can I improve in certain areas? Right? I'll tell you what, I have 2 New Year's resolutions this year. I'm going to tell you my personal stuff because I tell you, you know, every year you start thinking of all the things, you get overwhelmed. So you pick on something small. Not that I'm saying these are small. But my New Year resolutions were, number one, to try to have a set time, bli neder, in the morning and in the evening to learn Torah. Even if it's only 5 minutes after Marv or before Marv. And 5 minutes before Shacharis or after Shacharis in a pressing circumstance. So, to tell you the truth, that's incumbent upon a man. Morning and evening learning. That's not such a big chiddush. Okay, that's one. And the other is brachas. To try to say brachas out loud with a little bit of feeling. It's hard, you know, because you say them all day and you just rattle them off. So I hope, you know, those are my 2, you know. Everybody has to feel what they're sensitive to. But cheshbon nefesh is a very big thing, very key thing to growth in Yiddishkeit. Introspection, calculation, accounting of the soul. Other questions? I'll answer you like this.
I thought
it was just mitzvahs, but no. Well, it does. Heidi, I'll tell you, I've seen like my family, you know, very, very busy, constantly, always on the run, busy. But I see what they're busy with. They're always busy with acts of chesed, trying to take care of these Russians, trying to take care of these people in the hospital. That kind of racing around is good. We find Avraham, you know, racing to take care of the guests. That kind of racing is good. There's a certain area of Zerizis, you're supposed to take that quality of racing and running around and channel it into Torah. That's called Zerizis. Okay, but the running around and chasing I'm talking about is that, you know, you're late for, you know, very secular things, whether it's a tennis game or shopping or vacation or barely catching, you know, the airplane. Okay? Some of the greatest, you know, rabbis are constantly, you know, kolo rabbis. They're always racing from one thing to another, trying to get everything done, but they're involved constantly all day long helping their fellow Jews. Okay, so that's a different arena. Okay? And there's more, you know, there's a lot to do. We have a fascinating verse, chapter 25, verse 23. It says, okay, I'll wait, we'll flip, let's turn over the tapes now. Chapter 25, verse 23, it says, chapter 25, verse 23, Ki li'aretz, ki geirim v'toshavim atem imadi. The land belongs to me, referring to the Shemitah, right? Don't think the land belongs to you, the land belongs to me, because you are strangers, geirim is strangers, and then it says, toshavim, means like dwellers, because you're strangers and dwellers with me, which almost seems like contradictory things, right? Which one is it? Are you strangers or are you settlers with me? So the truth is, we are both, or can be both. This is our relationship via God. Strangers and dwellers. Gerim v'toshavim. One or the other. Either we're the stranger and God's the dweller, or we're the dweller and God's the stranger. Let me explain. If you think of yourselves as strangers in this land, just passing through, right? Right? You know the story of the Chafetz Chaim guys? Guy came to the Chafetz Chaim's house. And Chafetz Chaim was very poor. And just like a table, a couple chairs. And this guy was coming there for a big merchant fair, right, to buy a lot of merchandise. Come to the Chafetz Chaim's house. Rabbi, you're the rabbi of all Israel. Where's all your furniture? Where's everything? This is it? That's all you have in your house? Chafetz Chaim says, what do you mean? You have more? Where's all your furniture? He says, me? Are you kidding? You know what I have? I have marble floors and tapestries and paintings, chandeliers, you know, beautiful French mahogany furniture. Is there such a thing? French mahogany? I don't know. Okay, whatever. You know, all these things. Really? Where is it? Where are they? Because wait, I'm passing through. I'm going to schlep all my furniture with me. I'm here on a, you know, it's for the fair. I'm just passing through. I don't care all these things with me. So I have them back home. Chafetz Chaim says, same with me. I'm just passing through this world. I'm just a stranger here. I got all my stuff, all my real belongings back home. So that's it. If you start building in this world, like you're going to be permanent dwellers, you know, you start fixing up. I know people that are nonstop fixing up their houses. I know family, Chattanooga, they've been in the house, I think, 17 years. And the last thing I remember them doing is they changed the handles, beautiful, nice brass handles, to a brighter brass handles on all the little kitchen drawers and cabinets. They changed from a brush brass to a bright brass. It's cut. For 17 years, there's always something being done in that house. Constantly, because this is it. This is our whole life. Right here, we're going to be here forever. We think we're going to be permanent dwellers here. If that's your attitude, says God, giving the Toshav money, I'm with you. I'm with you in a stranger, in a permanent dweller relationship. You consider yourself a permanent dweller here? I'm a stranger to you. I'm going to be with you in just a very temporary fashion. But if you think of this world as a temporary place and you're just passing through and you have a comfortable place and good enough to get by, but you know, you're not interested every time to get the latest and most modern technology. It's never enough just to be comfortable. You always have to improve. Yeah, this is good enough. I'm just passing through. This will work, you know. Then, says God, you're acting like a stranger in this world. You're not going to be here forever. You just have enough to get by. I'm going to be a permanent dweller with you. Because you show your importance. Either way, we're going to have this relationship of a permanent dweller and stranger, okay? You consider this world like a prosdor, an antechamber to the great banquet hall, right? Then I'm going to be a dweller with you. And the Shekhinah will dwell with you always. But if you think this is it, Olam Hazeh, this world is what it's about, right? Then I'm going to be a stranger with you. Either way, we're going to have this relationship. Either you be the stranger, or I'll be the stranger. What do you say, stranger? It happens to be that's the one area that we're allowed. That's a permanent dwelling here. The one thing that's a permanent dwelling here is yeshivas, shuls, spiritual houses built for the sake of spirituality. You embellish those as much as possible. And now, we were doing the opposite. If we have halacha, you should not ever make your home taller or nicer than the shul in town. In Berlin, we did the opposite. We were warned about it. One of the great commentaries writes there, people are saying Berlin is our Jerusalem, and they're building these magnificent houses and arousing the jealousy of the Gentiles there. Right? Then that's a problem. When your permanent dwelling is nicer than God's dwelling, than the shul, there's a little things out of whack priority-wise. Okay? Okay, so that's the idea. Yeah, we want to have a comfortable lifestyle. What's the purpose? We're comfortable, we'll not be distracted, and we can concentrate on spirituality. Right? As it says, you should have a dira naya. It's one of three things that gives a person a calmness of mind. A dira naya, a nice place to live. And you gotta understand, but don't go crazy with it. You can't have a roof that's leaking. That's no good. People have had it, they've survived. But, you know, okay, we're in the clinic, we can't take that. On the other hand, you know, you gotta know it's a must. Okay. Let's go on. It's a beautiful verse towards the end of the Parsha of Bahar. Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. The children of Israel are to me servants. Avadahem. They're my servants. Isn't that beautiful? Slaves! We're slaves to God. I know it's a very derogatory term today's society, but we're very proud of this, that we get to be slaves. We get to serve God. The ultimate man, the highest spirituality endowed to anybody was Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moses. There was nobody like him, right? And what's the ultimate, the guy that, you know, Hashem sent to take us out of Egypt, got the Ten Commandments, split the sea, right? What's his eulogy? It says, Eved Hashem. That's it. Eved Hashem, the servant of God. There's nothing greater. You don't have a bigger eulogy than that. Eved Hashem, that's it. So this is it. This is what all of us are. B'nai Yisrael Avotim. We're all servants to God. There's no greater praise that we can get than that. Okay? Parsha ends, as Shabsoisai Tishmeru, Umikdashi Tirao Ani Hashem. Should keep my Sabbaths, right? And fear my sanctuaries. Now, Shabbos and the Mishkan, sanctuary, the temple we mentioned before, are mentioned many times hand in hand because in the arena of time, Kedusha Zman, Shabbos is the holiest element in time. And in the arena of place, geographical spot, the temple is the most holy place on earth. Right? So that's the correspondence. Now, this verse, Umikdashi Tirao, which is mentioned several times, that you should have fear and awe, respect in my sanctuaries, is this is the root source for many halachas of decorum in shul. Or Mikdash Ma'at, which means a miniature sanctuary, a miniature temple, is our shuls. Okay? So we have a lot of halachas, just like in the Beis HaMikdash, in the, you know, the big holy temple, we couldn't do certain things, we couldn't use it as a shortcut, we couldn't walk in there inappropriately dressed. So too, in our miniature sanctuaries that God gave us when we were in exile, He gave us some miniature sanctuaries, right? We have halachas of certain things, a certain decorum, certain times you can't sleep there or eat there, right, use them to get out of the rain, cut shortcuts, the way we're dressed in there, a lot of halachas, not to talk frivolously in there. You're only supposed to talk things of Kedusha in there. It's a very big problem, you know? Very big problem in the shul. I'm not talking about davening. Even when they're not davening, right? Even when they're not davening, you cannot talk frivolous things, right? Other highlights of the Parsha, chapter 25, verse 17. In verse 14, it has a lot of, if you sell things, you have to give your fellow Jew preference. If you sell something or you buy something, you should try to buy it from your fellow Jew. By the way, going on that verse that we mentioned that we're servants to God, in chapter 25, verse 55, right? It says on that verse, Chedush Yerim, he's beautiful language, Adam tzarich lispol mezeh, a person should be amazed by this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Karo Avdai Asher HaSeitzchem HaRetzvayim, that Hashem calls us His servants. It is the greatest honor in the world. We should be amazed and overwhelmed by it. What is this? Okay. It's an interesting thing. Chapter 25, verse 38, it says, I'll be for you a God in the land of Israel. And from here they learn, the Gemara and Ksuvos, that a person who lives in Israel, he's got God, and a person doesn't live in Israel as if he doesn't have God. It's an amazing statement. It shows you there's a certain holiness to the land of Israel. You can get a certain closeness to God in Israel that you cannot anyplace else. Okay? One more point here in the parsha, chapter 25, verse 12. It says a person has to know, Chedush Yerim also says this, that a person, he has, of course, thank God for anything he succeeds well in the physical world. That we understand. But also in the spiritual world, a person should realize he has no connection to mitzvahs. By themselves, being that it's a commandment of God, and He's infinite and you're finite, there's no way in the world you should be able to do any mitzvahs. Elamai, how come you can? Because Hashem commanded it as the Eternal One commanded the mitzvah. Therefore, it gave us the ability to be able to do the mitzvah. In other words, For example, Vahat Hashem Elokecha, love the Lord your God. Impossible for us to comprehend that or to do that. But by the very fact there's a command, makes it possible that we can love God. It's the commandment that makes it possible. That's why, by the way, on Shavuos, we'll try to talk to us more, we said Nasen V'Nishma. We will do and then we'll hear. How can we say that we'll do? We didn't even know what you commanded us. Hashem says, you want the Torah? We didn't say what's in it. We said, we'll do it. We'll hear it. Why? Because we understood it doesn't matter. Once you give a commandment, that makes it physically possible that we can do it. You hear? So therefore we can say, yes, we'll do it, and then we'll hear it. Okay? Okay, that's what it means, by the way, that from the command of God, we can go to all these different levels of holiness, and that's why we say many times before a mitzvah, Asher kichanu b'mitzvoisav v'tzivanu, that you sanctify it, you bring kedusha, you give us a kedusha, a holiness, you know, in your mitzvahs by commanding us. Kichanu b'mitzvoisecha v'tzivanu. You sanctify us with your commandments. Without your commandment, we wouldn't be sanctified to be able to do the mitzvah. Vitzivano, and you commanded us. You hear? You hear? It's very nice, beautiful stuff. Okay, here we go. One of the commandments also, the exact above, that you should strengthen your fellow Jew, you should help him, you should, you should give him tzedakah. But it says even before you give him tzedakah, when he sees on his way down, before he has to turn tzedakah, try to support him. Buy something from, if he has a business and you don't really need it, buy it anyways. Support them, right? You know, keep them around in business, right? You know, guy's a plumber, you know, you don't need it. Have him come check your pipes. Let him charge you $30 an hour, your fellow Jew. It's a form of tzedakah, and it gives him dignity, right? It's a form of a dignified way to serve him, okay? To sustain him, rather. Okay. Now, both Shabbos and Shemitah, and by the way, the connection to the Bechukosai is the fact that we were exiled because we didn't keep the Shemitah laws. That's one of the reasons we were exiled. Okay? So, the connection of Shabbos and Shemitah is both been testified that on 6 days, you know, you work, or 6 days, 6 years, you sow the field, right? And then comes a seventh, either the seventh day or seventh year where you stop. Where man stops striving after the material gains of the world. Right? In favor of dedication to the spiritual, to spiritual growth. Right? That's what both of these represent, a sabbatical year and a sabbatical day. Okay, by working 6 days or 6 years, and then we rest, we infuse Kedusha, right? Not just to that Shabbos and the Shemitah year. We infuse Kedusha to those 6 work days of Chol, to the 6 working years. Right? That's what Sfas Emes says this. Very important. Just like we talked about Meiser. When you give a tenth of your money to tzedakah, you infuse the other 90% with holiness. There's a Hekshar Mitzvah that allows you to do the 10%. So all of it gets raised up. Okay? It's a tremendous level there. Okay? That's right. 1 hour a day, Hashem can count the whole day you learn Torah. If that's what you're looking for, that's what you're focused on, if that's why you're trying to work your whole schedule around, so you're able to, you learn 1 hour a day. The other hand, a person can learn 8 hours a day. But if he doesn't find his real chias, his real vitality from that, right? Hashem can count just as 8 hours a day that you learned. You see, you're really looking forward to, you can't wait to get rid of your learning seder so you can go out and play tennis. But yeah, you feel, yes, I have an obligation to do my learning, yes, but I can't wait till it's over because I'm really looking forward to that tennis game. Okay? Okay. Getting to know too much about me, you guys. Okay. Okay, moving on. It says in Bechukosai, it says in chapter 26, verse 8, that 5 will chase 100, and 100 will chase 1,000. So it says the proportion's not really there. You know, you see that it's greater. You know, it's a greater miracle that 100 will chase 1,000. So he says... It says, "Eino daime rabim amasim dashem satera lmuatim oisim." You can't compare many that are doing the Torah to a few that are doing it. In other words, there's a big thing, a lot of things we do called barov am hadras melech. If you, everything being equal, the more people, the more glory to the king. In other words, you have this shul to go to. You should go to the shul. All things being equal, that is. There's other factors. But all things being equal, you should dive into the larger minyan. Right?
That's why, because it gives more honor to the king. A lot of Jews doing the Torah, right, is it gives a special spiritual power. Therefore, it's here it talks about, you know, 100 could chase 1,000, even though the proportion's out of whack, because the more, it's not, in other words, it's not like if you do one mitzvah, I'm going to do something very vulgar, you get $1 million. So if you get 2 mitzvahs, you get 2 million. 1 mitzvah gives you 1 million, 2 mitzvahs gives you 100 million. Spirituality, you know, doesn't just work on an addition and multiplication process. It gives a whole different dimension and quality by the quantity. Okay? So you can never compare a few Jews doing Torah mitzvahs to a lot of Jews doing it. It's not just a quantity thing. It becomes more of a quality thing. And out of proportion in mathematics. Okay. Okay. Chapter 26, verse 21 says, "Vintilchu imi kiri." If you go with me casually. This is repeated 7 times in the portion. If you do my mitzvahs in a casual fashion, then I will be to you casually. Right? In other words, you know, okay, it's time to daven, I gotta do it. But again, you don't find your hochias from it, right? Right? You just do it and it's very casual. You know, this thing, then Hashem, measure for measure, that's how it'll be with us. So a lot of times we want to understand, how come we don't see the hand of God? How come we don't see the measure for measure for things in the world? You know, why is God doing things? It's because we are doing things towards God in a casual fashion, in a haphazard fashion, in a coincidental fashion. Therefore, He deals with us measure for measure also that way. And we don't see the cause and effects. We don't understand why things are happening in the world. He's with us, carry, in a casual way, the same way, mikra, coincidence, because that's the way we are with Him. We pick and choose our mitzvahs. You know, we decide what we do, how much we put in. It's very casual. We don't find a whole life in spirituality. Therefore, that's why we cannot put things together. That's come we have to sit there and try to figure out if something happens to us. What sin could have brought this upon me? You know, no one's holding on that level anymore. We can't figure it out. We don't understand why things are happening in the world. We can't put it together. The hashkocha of Hashem. Because we're living in this curse. We are spiritually casual with God. So therefore, happenings in the world, there's no pattern. It makes no sense. They seem haphazard to us. It's hidden from us. Okay? Okay, the bottom line, guys, from these portions, both the Bahar and Bechukosai, which I want to finish with, and this Bechukosai is called the Tochacha, the rebuke. We don't call it the curses, we call it the rebuke. It's telling us very simply that that not only our prosperity, not just our prosperity, but our very survival depends Our very survival depends on our loyalty to Hashem and His mitzvahs. That's the bottom line. That's from Nachmanides, Ramban. And it's repeated so many times, and we just can't seem to get it straight. You know, and all the seculars saying, oh, you mean you Jews just sit there and shul and daven all day and don't do anything? Who will fight the war? God will fight the war. We have it in B'shalach. Atem Techarishon, you be quiet. Hashem Yilachem Lachem, and God will fight for you. By the way, that's the first time we're ever in battle. And the first time is always a paradigm. This is Rav Tzadok HaKohen. It's a paradigm of how we're supposed to look at all battles. The first time something happens to us, the first time we came to money. Well, we'll talk about that. We're supposed to look at it as a loan. That's why we use the word She'elah, which means to ask from your neighbors, but also a She'elah means a loan. Because we're always supposed to look at money as a loan from God. That's the first time it's mentioned as a nation that we came into money when we left Egypt. The first time it's mentioned that we got in a war is in Egypt, right? The Egyptians come after, and what we're told to do, this is the paradigm how we're supposed to treat all wars. Atem Techarishon, you be quiet, Hashem Yilachem Lachem, and God will fight for you. You just have trust in God. Okay, that doesn't mean we don't do efforts today, but the attitude is that is the paradigm, the first time in war, that God fights the wars of Israel. And you want to do something? You know, you want to do something? Here it is. Your survival is dependent on your victory in war, is dependent on Torah mitzvahs. Do you know who they used to pick for the army in Israel? They used to pick the tzaddikim. Look at the account of who they picked for the army. Anybody who had a sin as slight as talking between his tefillin on his hand from between the time he put his tefillah on his head, was exempt from the army. He couldn't fight in the army of God. Okay? The army of God, the army of Israel was reserved for perfect tzaddikim. Those are the only ones who are allowed to battle in the army of God, okay? Because that's the real strength. And the wicked people knew it. Goliath. What do you think he was doing? 40 days and 40 nights. The Navi tells us for 40 days and 40 nights, he was up there challenging Israel. You know what he was trying to do? 40 days and 40 nights. That's the same amount of days and nights that Moshe was up there getting the Torah. He was trying to negate that spirituality. The day and night is when we recite Shema. Gemara says if Israel only has the merit of reciting Shema in the evening and in the morning, we'll be victorious in war. He was trying to distract us from that spiritual mitzvah, and therefore we could fall Chalila in his hands. He understood it. These people, Ham and Goliath, they were wicked, but they weren't stupid. They knew the power of spirituality. Okay? So that's it. This portion, and you can see a lot of the Holocaust, by the way, in this portion. A lot of the Holocaust. Look at the portion, the Chukosai, the one that's going to be read next week. A lot of it, again, emphasizes again and again and again, I don't know how many times we have to get through our head, to be prosperous, to enjoy this life and the next life, and to be our very survival is not on the land of Israel, as much as we love Israel, right? Is not planting trees, is not political, you know, or economic sanctions. It's very simple. Doing the mitzvahs of God. We are a nation of God by virtue of the Torah and nothing else. Certain things help us do the mitzvahs better. Israel. You know, so, but we can survive without the land of Israel. We cannot survive without Torah. We gotta get that straight. And when we get that straight, we will be exempt from this rebuke of the portion and will fulfill the blessing of it. If you go on my statutes, then we'll have it made, both in this world and the next world. Good Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.